And I'm pleased to welcome my guest this afternoon. It's Luke Dady, who's an archivist over there at the little Dorset History Centre. Good afternoon to you, Luke. And how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, fine. You've had a long way to come, haven't you?
Yeah, a whole minute's walk across the car park.
Now then, for the benefit of our listeners, can you explain what you do? What's your role over there?
So I'm an archivist. I'm one of the few archivists that work over there. We look after Dorset's history, effectively. Records that go back over 1,000 years we hold there, and I'm one of the team that look after those records, make them available for the public, catalogue them, make sure everything is accessible so people can find out more about their past.
Excellent. You've got a lot of records over there as well, haven't you?
At least 500,000. We've got the best part of 400,000 records properly catalogued, and then many more that just aren't catalogued, so at least 500,000, probably closer to 1,000,000, I'd have thought.
And do you go back to the days before it was all computerised? Because it must have been a big job to get all that catalogued.
We still have a lot of paper records and a lot of paper catalogues. So many that were typed up from when the archives were first begun down here in the 1960s, so yeah, paper catalogues going back that far, but a lot of it's going on to computer now. Yeah. So
it's a big job too.
Yeah. It's challenging given how few of us there are. We try and make ends meet and do the best we can, but there's a lot to do and not enough hours in the day.
So age-wise, what would be some of your oldest records?
The oldest thing we have dates from 965. Pre-Doomsday, pre-William the Conqueror, pre all that sort of stuff. Please don't ask me what it is. I couldn't tell you what it is.
That was going to be the next question.
And then we've got everything right through to the modern day. So, like I say, hundreds of thousands of records covering over 1,000 years worth of history. So,
So what sort of things would you cover there? What sort of different records have you got?
The older stuff tends to be more legal based, because those were the important records to be kept. So you're talking things like court rolls, you're talking things like title deeds, those sorts of material which have a legal basis that people needed to keep. The more modern you get, you begin to see things like parish records become more prevalent. So those are the things that genealogists use, birth, marriage and death records, as well as other stuff, newspapers, for example. We have a wide range of newspapers there, map based things, and then you're getting into the more modern period, you get things like oral history recordings, interviews, that sort of thing. Photographs obviously are quite a late thing in terms of when they come into the piece, so a huge range of stuff in all sorts of different mediums.
And how far about something like a newspaper? What sort of age can you go back for a newspaper?
The oldest ones we've got go back to about the 1820s or so. They're a bit patchy in their coverage, and obviously you get ones that didn't survive, so sort of fallen apart. Newspapers were always printed on pretty rubbish quality paper, and therefore the survival rate of the older ones is a little bit hit and miss. 1820s or so is the oldest we've got.
So the documents, they have to be stored in special sort of in a special way?
Yeah, so we've got a big repository at the back of the building that holds all the records in a temperature and humidity controlled environment, basically to look after them. Photographs, film, all those sorts of things have to be kept in a slightly different place because they require different sets of temperatures and humidities. But our repositories look after all that stuff in there, just over the road. So yeah,
excellent. And some of the old documents, probably handwritten, are they quite hard to understand and read?
Yes and no. There's generally a template for some of the older stuff. You can kind of, once you get your eye in, once you learn the tricks, you sort of understand it. And when I say older stuff, you're talking sort of 1300s, 1400s, 1500s. You then get through to sort of 1700s, 1800s, and those rules that they used to use sort of fall out of use. And you then just get everybody's handwriting, which, for better or worse, is sometimes quite challenging to read.
Written by the local doctor.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. And then you get, from there you start getting typed stuff at the end of the 19th century, and it obviously becomes a lot easier. There's a period of about 200 years where it can be quite challenging.
Yeah, I mean, my wife a few years ago was doing the old family tree thing, and she was saying when you go back and, some of the writing was difficult, and the spelling could be a bit hit and miss as well, because obviously they didn't have the education.
Yeah, and standardised spelling wasn't a thing for a long period of time. Yeah. So it's not just names, it's places, it's all sorts of words spelt in all sorts of ways. Yeah. And very phonetically as well, people used to write down what they heard rather than how they think it should be spelt, if that makes sense. Yeah. So you get lots of words that are you read them and have to sort of sound them out phonetically to try and understand what they actually mean. So,
well, it is a strange language.
Yes, down here particularly.
Do you have like a sort of a favourite sort of thing that you like to look up?
So part of my background when I first came down here is to catalogue the bank's archive. And in that there are the best part 2,000 drawings of Egypt in the Middle East that were done by William John Banks, who was a traveller and explorer. And those drawings are phenomenally fascinating. They show us what the land was like at that time in the 1810s, 1820s. But they also show us a snapshot of stuff that no longer exists. A lot of the areas that William saw is either part of war-torn countries, so you're talking the Middle East, you're talking Syria, those sorts of areas that have been bombed and no longer exist in that sense. Or in Egypt, you've got places that were flooded by the Aswan Dam when that was built, and those historical sites no longer exist. And indeed, some of them moved to some of the important buildings. This is were moved to places like New York. I'm pretty sure there's in the Met Museum in New York, I'm pretty sure there's a building there. Spain as well, I'm aware that had a building from Egypt literally just moved brick by brick over. So those places no longer exist, but the drawings that we've got show us what this land was like I say, best part of 200 years ago.
And for you, that's exciting, holding it in your hand.
I love it. I really do enjoy it. Not just because, I mean, the drawings themselves are wonderful to look at, wonderful visual things, but the implications of them and what we can learn about both how Egypt and the Middle East were at that time, about how the travels were done at that time. You see all the different boats that were used as they were cruising up and down the Nile. You do really get a good snapshot of life in a completely different part of the world, which I find fascinating.
Well, obviously, for someone like you, they're priceless, but do they have a monetary value as well?
You can't put a price on history, no, can you? No, those sorts of things. I mean, I'm sure the insurers would probably try and like to put a price in it, but yeah. And indeed, auction houses do occasionally sell stuff that they obviously put prices on. But, you know, these are unique, one-of-a-kind records. They don't exist anywhere else, and therefore it's very difficult to put a proper price on them.
Now, is the History Centre, is that open? People come along and look stuff up? Do you have to make an appointment or anything?
You do. You have to make an appointment. We're open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday each week, and then the first Saturday of every month. So this coming Saturday, we're open, for example. If you want to look at original records, we do ask that people make an appointment. Give us an email, give us a phone call, whichever way, and somebody will get back to you and confirm an appointment. If you want to look at things that are on online, on Ancestry, we have free access to Ancestry, for example. If you want to look at things that are on microfilm, such as the newspapers, you don't need an appointment for that. And we've got a local studies library as well, and you don't need to make an appointment to look at any of the material in that.
Excellent. Are there things that people can't have a look at, too valuable or fragile?
Fragility is a concern. We have various documents which have conservation issues that we can't let people look at. Where we do have those, we try and make a surrogate copy, so there is something that a member of the public could come and look at, but sometimes that's not always possible, or we don't know about the issue of fragility until, you know, quite close to the visit. And then the other stuff that we can't let people look at is anything covered by GDPR. So we've got things like hospital records and school records that in the last 100 years have data that people can't access. It's not publicly available data.
You've got all that as well?
Indeed, yeah. School records are a bit more patchy. There's no legal obligation for schools to deposit records. So we've got various records from different schools around the county, but they're not complete by any sort of stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, don't go looking at my school record. Look at my school reports.
Curious now.
Yeah, I'm a bit scared actually. Yeah. Now you've got all these series of talks coming out. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so we've got a series starting tomorrow lunchtime. The talks we've titled From the Stacks. They are meant to be a show and tell session, so we're going to get some records out of our stacks and show them off to people. The talks are deliberately designed to be short lunchtime talks, so workers in the town, for example, can come along during their lunch break, and they're meant to be free at access, so people can come and get a feel for what sort of things we've got.
Again, do people need to book for that?
Not at all. Just turn up. We don't know in that sense how many we're expecting. It could be 10, it could be 100. We'll find that out tomorrow lunchtime.
Is it a problem if it's 100?
Probably not. It might be a bit of a squeeze, particularly if it's a warm day. Okay. But no, we should be able to cope, I would have thought.
That sounds great. And can you give us an idea what's in the first talk?
Yeah, so I'll be doing the first talk. And as I've just sort of said about William John Banks, the Banks family are kind of my what I know about. So my specialist subject, if you like, in terms of our record. So I've got 10, a dozen different documents out of that collection to show off different parts of their history, really.
I can see you going on Mastermind. My specialist subject is the Banks family.
Yeah, I do often say that I feel like I know the Banks family more than I know my own family in some ways.
Well, yeah.
I've spent so much time looking at their records and understanding their history that I do feel they are sort of part of me now in some way. Yeah.
Well, I must admit, I never knew about the Banks family before, but they sound very interesting.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, the Banks family are the family who owned the likes of Corfe Castle, Kingston Lacy, those places.
Yeah, so the Banks Arms, the pub in Corfe. Yeah,
yep,
of course.
All that, it's all related. So they own, you know, large parts of land in the east of the county. And like I say, I came down here in 2015 to catalogue all their records, and here we are nearly 10 years later, and there's still a bit to finish. So, yeah.
Well, it sounds brilliant. I hope it all goes well for you, Lee.
Thank you.
And can you come in and tell us when the next talk's on and tell us about that?
Yeah, so the talks are happening. Will be happening on the last Wednesday of each month. Yeah. So obviously,
we'll arrange a date to get you back if that's okay.
Absolutely. We're going to split it so I'm giving tomorrow's, and then a colleague will give next month's. And just because different people at the History Centre have different, you know, interests, different thoughts, and different favourite documents, if you like. So they will be showing off all their different different things. And you know, we hope it gives the public a good sort of feel for what sort of records we have.
Excellent. Well, many thanks for coming in, and good luck with the first one tomorrow.
Thank you very much.